Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to Generation Y ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible. Starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
We're brought to you by Audible. Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, or doing your chores. I usually listen to Audible when I'm on a plane because it's the best way to keep my mind off the boredom and claustrophobia being in a plane. I'm currently listening to The Long Walk. It was one of Stephen King's first books that he wrote under Richard Bachman. It's an incredible story about teens who are volunteered to go on a long walk. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. Right now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. That's audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500.
I'm doing pretty good there, Justin. How are you?
I'm doing okay.
This episode is brought to you by June's Journey. Unleash your inner sleuth and step into the glamorous 1920s. Uncover scandalous family secrets and solve the mysterious murder of June Parker's sister. With dazzling hidden object scenes and riveting storylines in each chapter, June's Journey invites you to a thrilling era of mystery and romance. And now, June needs your help, detective. Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. Your adventure awaits.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. FedEx offers fast delivery, more visibility, simple returns, and weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. population on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. With FedEx, you get picture proof of delivery, ensuring you always know where your package is. Returns are simple with packageless and paperless returns. Plus, FedEx Ground is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. So, what are you waiting for? See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Yep. I know that Nick and the captain already covered this, but by the time we found out about it, that train had already left the station. So our release is a little bit delayed, but there was no turning back after we heard about that. And I'm sure they did a wonderful job on their episode. In fact, I know they did. What's the subject tonight, Aaron?
Tonight, we're talking about Diane Schuler and the Taconic State Parkway crash that claimed the lives of 8 people. Diane Schuler, she was driving her 2 young children as well as her 3 nieces home after a weekend camping trip. After some strange calls from herself and one of her nieces, as well as reports of her minivan driving erratically, her vehicle would end up driving the wrong way at high speed on the Taconic State Parkway. That resulted in the deaths of 8, including Diane Schuler, her daughter, her 3 nieces, and 3 men in another vehicle. Her son was the only survivor between those 2 vehicles. A 3rd vehicle was struck as well, but that couple survived.
And when was this and where?
This occurred on July 26th, 2009, in the state of New York. And what makes this case so curious is that Diane Schuler was known to be a woman who had it all together. She took care of her children. She was a successful executive at Cablevision. She was known to be a great mother, a great friend, a wonderful wife. So how is it possible that she could end up driving the wrong way on a parkway and cause such a tragedy?
Yeah, it's not like she got on the highway and or the parkway and just mistakenly got on there and then had an accident. She drove almost 2 miles and other cars had to swerve out of the way to avoid an accident. So there's a question there. This was a highly requested case by our fans and listeners because there's a documentary out there called There's Something Wrong with Aunt Diane.
Diane Schuler was the 4th child and only daughter of Warren Hance Sr. and Eileen Hance. Her brother Warren was the father of the 3 nieces we mentioned in the summary, and he was also the owner of the minivan that she was driving that day. Diane met her husband Daniel Schuler at a wedding. Those that spoke about their relationship said that Daniel was her first love. Diane was an executive at Cablevision, a telecommunications company, and Daniel worked as a security guard for the Nassau County Police Department on the night shift. Daniel's parents are Joseph and Irene Schuler. Diane was described as the boss. Everyone said that she made the decisions. She got things done. She planned things. And she made sure that her kids were taken care of every day, and she was very successful at her job, earning a 6-figure income. Daniel worked nights as a security guard, and so the couple took advantage of weekends together, planning things with their kids. At the time, their son Brian was 5, and their daughter Erin was 2. One thing we should note, Eileen, Diane's mother, left the family when Diane was just 9 years old. And Diane never wanted to discuss it with anyone, and she never wanted anything to do with her mother since then, despite her mother's interest in having a relationship with her.
I get it. People estrange from their family all the time. So on the 24th, that Friday, they pack up. Diane does most of the packing, and they head out to, what's the park name?
It's Hunter Lake Campground in Parksville, New York.
This is a normal, typical thing that they do on the weekends. And there's no incident. Nothing's weird the whole time they're out there. And come Sunday morning, start packing up to leave. And everything seems normal. No one at the campsite, the children or her husband or brother think there's anything out of the ordinary.
Early that morning, Daniel gets up and he washes his boat. And later, Diane will get up and get the kids up. She's the one that packs everything. Gets the kids into the vehicle, and she's ready to leave at 9:30.
Nobody reports anything odd, so they leave, and they hit up McDonald's for breakfast, and it's a little bit before 10 a.m. She actually has a conversation with the McDonald's employees. She has to get food ordered for all the children, which there's 5 of them. Nobody says she appears intoxicated or slurring her speech. None of that. Everything appears normal.
Sometime after 10:30, they leave McDonald's and Diane drives over to a Sunoco station to get gas. And then she goes inside the Sunoco, walks around a little bit, and they say she asks for gel caps, but they don't have any.
Like Tylenol gel caps or some sort of pain reliever, headache medicine. And you can see on the surveillance camera her walking in. She's not staggering. She's not doing anything weird. Again, they say the employees do not detect any alcohol or anything odd about her. But on the surveillance tape, you can tell that you can only see her. There's nobody else in the range of the camera. So I don't know if the employees there would have been close enough to smell her or detect anything odd. But if she was acting weird, they definitely would have been able to see that.
After that, she drives on to Route 17. After 11:30, Emma Hance calls her dad and says they're running late.
But this is an hour after the gas station, which is a little weird to me.
Yeah, it's about 40 minutes or so, 40 minutes or more from the time that she leaves the gas station. So it's kind of strange. What is she doing? Because they say that if she had just gone home, it shouldn't have taken even that long.
Yeah, maybe 40 minutes tops to just drive straight home. But I get it. They've stopped at McDonald's and made another stop at a gas station. But we're 2 hours later now.
And it said that maybe they're stuck in traffic somewhere.
It's Sunday.
Sometime before noon, Diane is seen on the side of the road bent over as if she's nauseous or throwing up.
Yeah, that's not good. And this is also where other drivers are reporting a minivan on the road, driving erratically, swerving in and out of lanes. They say a woman driving, and she seems very intent, very focused on going around traffic. She's tailgating people. She ends up tailgating a car. She's on their bumper. She's honking at them, flashing her brights at them, trying to get them to move out of the way. So this is very road ragey. This is very aggressive. At around 12:30 is when these people that she was tailgating, they actually pulled off to a rest stop. And they noticed that Diane actually pulls off too, but she's over kind of in the truck parking area where they're in the car parking area. They're thinking about approaching her and confronting her about this road rage incident because it was that scary. But they see her puking. She got out of the van and is vomiting. Before they know it, she's back in the van and she takes off. One more thing I wanted to say is on the video of the gas station, when she leaves the gas station, if you can see her pulling out of the parking lot at a high rate of speed, and she pulls out onto the road, apparently not really looking at cross traffic very much because it just looks dangerous. I personally think everyone drives kind of crappy, but this appears to be on another level, especially when she's on the highway and multiple people are reporting this menace on the road going in and out of lanes. But they say that it does not appear that she's swerving or weaving. They're saying that she's driving aggressively with a purpose. After that point, there are some wrong number calls made from Diane's phone. I was not able to find the phone numbers that were actually dialed because I would have liked to have seen if they got the area code right or if there was any coherency in the number dialed or if it was just random numbers. And the reason why I question this is because did somebody not know how to use a phone, like a child, trying to dial out for help? Or was this Diane not understanding how to use the phone? But then right before 1 p.m., we get Emma talking to her father, and she's in a panic. She doesn't know what's going on. She's saying that there's something wrong with Aunt Diane. She says Aunt Diane can't see. She's saying that she's distraught, but this is an 8-year-old child trying to describe a panic situation. So it's a little vague, but what did you get from that call?
Well, I think it says that there's a real possibility here that the wrong calls that are happening are coming from Diane because Emma knows how to call her dad.
They say that they hear the other children in the car crying in the background. Diane actually will take the phone from Emma and say, everything's fine. The kids are playing around, but they can tell that everything's not fine. And they can sense that Diane is slurring her speech. She is not as coherent as she was just an hour before.
Around 1 o'clock, Diane will talk with both Jackie and Warren. While she's talking to Jackie, it just seems like there's something off. And then the call gets dropped. And then Warren will call Diane back. He's talking to her as she's going through a toll. at the Tappan Zee Bridge area. Emma will talk to her father, and she will try to tell him about some of the signs that she's seen, including Tarrytown and Sleepy Hollow.
She's trying to give him a location of where they're at.
And Diane takes the phone back, and Warren asks her to wait there. Now, there is, at this point, from what we understand, Diane has pulled off. And where does she pull off to?
It's this like little pull-off area that's very small. It's only a few car lengths. It's for emergencies only. So if you had like a flat tire or something, there's not a shoulder here. It's just a pull-off area because it's a bridge. And apparently Diane pulls off, hangs up on Warren, gets out of the car, and drops the phone off on the side of the road.
Well, four wrong calls are made from her phone, and then Diane leaves her phone on a barrier or a divider in that pull-off area where she had been at, and then she drives away. And it's after this that Warren starts trying to contact her again, only now it's going to voicemail.
Like the phone's turned off and there's no one there to answer it. Warren and his wife will start calling authorities and saying, you know, we suspect a medical emergency. We think that there's something wrong, and they're trying to give the police the location of where they suspect she might be. But when you're in a car driving, I mean, you can cover a lot of ground in a very short amount of time. So it takes a little bit for the response to happen, for them to get the authorities on the same page of, we think there's a medical problem with her. She says she can't see and she's incoherent.
Around 1:30, Diane turns onto the exit ramp for the Taconic State Parkway, going the wrong way. Other vehicles are swerving to avoid being hit. Some are attempting to alert her as to the danger she's in. They're honking their horn. They're waving. They're trying to get her attention. The minivan is driving very deliberately, they say, and it's picking up speed. It drives for about 1.7 miles and gets up to 85 miles per hour or so when it collides head on with a Chevy Trailblazer. That Trailblazer will then strike a Chevy Tracker. So we have this horrible accident, and the minivan would roll down a median and come to a stop with the front of the vehicle in flames. It's immediate, but about 6 to 7 people are attempting to get people out of this minivan. It's on fire. They can see that there are children inside. They're trying to break into this van because it's crumpled up. Diane will actually fall at the feet of a couple of people trying to rescue them. Brian isn't even seen right away. He's underneath some of the girls. Kate, Emma, and Aaron are removed from the side of the vehicle, while Allison and Brian are taken out through the rear of the vehicle. And Brian is clearly alive. His eyes are shut, but he's crying. And he is taken immediately to an ambulance and rushed to Westchester Medical Center in Valhalla, New York. The couple from the Chevy Tracker are also alive. They're taken to Phelps Memorial in Sleepy Hollow. Kate is rushed to Phelps Memorial, but she's pronounced dead. And sadly, Diane, Aaron, Emma, Allison, as well as Michael and Guy Bastardi and Daniel Longo from the Trailblazer are all deceased.
But the people in the Tracker are okay. Like, they got minor injuries. This is one of the worst accidents up in the Northeast, and it's shut down the highway. But with that, you have the media and you have other commuters that have gotten out of their vehicles. A lot of people are helping, but there is a large number of people that have their phones out and are taking photos. That's kind of gruesome, but luckily the police took care of this, right?
Well, more than just the police, but you had police and others who formed barriers to preserve the dignity of the victims. They were holding up things
like blankets, umbrellas, and tarps and stuff. Yeah.
And forming walls so that pictures could not be taken of everyone, and especially of the children.
At the scene of the accident, they recover a shattered bottle of vodka. And this is kind of our first hint as to what might have caused this whole situation.
It was a 1.75 liter of Absolut vodka.
Yeah. And people are wondering how Diane could have got on the wrong way, wrong side of the highway, and caused this. And the police immediately start looking into it as a drunk driving accident because of the vodka. But people are waiting to hear about the autopsy and toxicology reports.
But this is at odds with what people know about Diane. The feeling out there is, even with that bottle found, it's not her. She wouldn't do that. She wouldn't go drinking and driving.
This is so outside of her character. They do the autopsy. They do the toxicology. The police are treating it as a drunk driving accident. But her husband, Daniel, is saying, no way. That's not the case. And when the state comes back that she had a BAC level of 0.19, which is equivalent to 10 drinks-ish, if you take a regular standard bottle of, you know, a fifth of vodka, they hold between 12 and 14 shots. They're saying that she had the equivalent of 10 shots. So she drank a fifth of vodka. They also find that she had THC in her blood. It's always hard to determine if somebody was high or if this is residual, you know, things in their bloodstream, but she has a blood alcohol content of this high and she has THC in her blood. I think we can kind of go with, yeah, she might have smoked some marijuana that morning.
Yeah, there's a question here because testing for THC is kind of tricky. Some tests will reveal long-term use or at least use sometime in the past, and some tests can reveal recent use. Well, if you look over the toxicology report, they're discovering THC in all of the tests. So they see long-term use and recent use.
Which would dictate that she had smoked recently that morning.
Goes against what her husband Daniel's been saying, which is, you know, she doesn't do this stuff. She doesn't really smoke marijuana. She doesn't really drink. Before the toxicology report came in, the cause of death was listed as blunt force injuries, multiple skeletal fractures, lacerations, and contusions of internal organs.
She had lacerations on her face, but what I read from the autopsy report was a lot of the contusions to her torso were probably what killed her.
So this toxicology report is really indicating that she was under the influence while she was driving. Again, it goes against what everyone seemed to know about her. Investigations are starting up, and one officer, James Boyle, starts interviewing witnesses, and they are describing a minivan that's driving deliberately but aggressively, honking continuously for a mile. At one point, when the vehicle was going the wrong way on, no one could get her attention. Many of these drivers were calling 911 and trying to report it. But the trouble here is that the accident takes place so quickly that even though these calls are coming in, there's no way to respond in time. Officer Boyle also interviewed Sergeant Kenneth Cano, who reported that Jackie Hance had called Tarrytown Police to report a possible medical emergency with Diane Schuler. And they were given a description, but no one could figure out really where Diane was at the time.
The reason why is because she actually went down the parkway one direction and then turned around and came back. If you've been listening to the timeline, there's huge gaps of time here. It's really hard to find out where she was at and identify that. You know, they knew she was getting onto the turnpike, but after that, everything's game. She could have gone multiple different directions on the highway. You would suspect that she would be heading home, which she kind of was, but this is an area she drives a lot. She shouldn't have been lost.
And as best we can tell, she had made some stops because she was ill, but she also was just driving around and doing so aggressively.
We're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So the other day, Aaron and I were trying to get concert tickets to a show we really wanted to see. And I waited before I bought my ticket. And guess what? I missed my chance. And that's why you have to act quickly or somebody else will get it instead. It's like hiring for your business. you want to find the most talented people for your roles, you have to scoop them up before the competition does. So that's why the best way to do that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles, and immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Field of Greens. I like eating healthy, and I've tried a lot of different supplements. I've tried juicing, and I've spent a lot of money and wasted a lot of time. And let me tell you, honestly, none of those things ever made me feel better. With Field of Greens, it's a superfood that gives you nutrition the way nature intended. It's packed full of organic fruits and vegetables, not extracts. And when you're getting those nutrients, you can sleep better, notice things like your hair and your nails, feel stronger, helps with digestion. You just feel better overall. My favorite flavor is the strawberry lemonade. I have a feeling you're going to love this product the way I do. But if for some reason you don't like it, they give you a 100% money-back guarantee. Plus, you can get 15% off your first order and free rush shipping. Visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code GenY. Promo code GenY at fieldofgreens.com. Fieldofgreens.com. Go check it out.
The husband, Daniel, is not happy with the toxicology report. He will end up hiring a lawyer, Dominic Barbara, and he hires a private investigation firm. They call a press conference. I guess they want to make a statement. Now, normally, surviving family members of a drunk driving crash are not making public statements. So this is very out of the ordinary. But Dominic, their lawyer, tries to run this press conference like it's in a courtroom, like there's some sort of court of law here. And he starts off saying, no eyewitness detected marijuana breath or alcohol on her breath, so we will not answer any questions about those things, which, okay, like that's, you know, bottle of alcohol recovered at the scene. There's a lot of questions there. He will not allow journalists to ask questions. He will shut them down. He's being very combative to them. He will go into Diane showed tooth pain for the months prior, and she might have had a tooth abscess. They also will say that she had a lump on her leg that moved around, and that it's possible that she was having a diabetic attack and or a stroke. If he was nice to the press, this probably would have come out in their favor. If he would have allowed any questioning, I'm sure people wouldn't have thought much about it. But he was such a jerk and so combative to the people attending that this just sparked more questions and more hate for this whole tragedy and the woman who is responsible for it. The autopsy reveals that there's no signs of stroke. They say that they didn't see any evidence of a tooth abscess. How do you tell if you have an abscess tooth, Aaron?
Well, the main way that they tell is you go to your dentist and they'll tap on your teeth with a probe. You'll feel it if you have a tooth abscess because it's an infection in your mouth.
It's extremely painful, right?
It is very painful. And I've had one, and it's definitely something that you would want to treat if you had one. And dentists can take care of it for you. Although, here's something about Diane that's well known to her family, which is she didn't like going to a doctor. And I would imagine she probably didn't like going to a dentist either.
She just didn't have the time. She's running the show. It's a priority thing.
Now, an autopsy, you would think, would show a tooth abscess because they x-ray your head, but they didn't see anything that indicated that she had an abscess tooth. All we have are reports from people that were close to her that said that she was touching the side of her face on the right side and seemed to be in a little bit of a pain. But again, Diane is not known to be someone who will complain to you about any kind of pain she's having. She keeps it to herself pretty much.
Since Daniel is not happy with these results, he hires Tom Ruskin, private detective, to look into this. And Daniel and the lawyer are 100% on the side that these results are wrong and there's something else to explain this situation. Or she was in pain and she was trying to self-medicate that pain with alcohol, and they will point to her going to the gas station to find gel caps. Okay, well, that's proof that she was in pain because she wanted gel caps. Nothing to do with she might have had a headache, or maybe she drank the night before and she was a little hungover. No mention of that. Just she's in pain, so therefore this is evidence or proof. But to drink an entire bottle of vodka for pain, you know, there's the question of, was she a closet alcoholic? Well, we're not too sure, but if she was, she could have hid it from them. But even a closet alcoholic doesn't get up in the morning and chug a bottle of vodka. People that are in pain don't really chug a bottle of vodka either, especially if it's tooth pain or even migraine pain. Usually you'll drink. You'll have a drink or two. You might sip all day long, especially if you're a closet alcoholic. You'll pour a little bit in your coffee or pour a little bit in your Big Gulp, and you'll keep that buzz going all day. But the time frame of the morning to the accident and her blood alcohol content level, plus she had undigested alcohol in her system. So her blood alcohol level was only at 0.19. If she would have lived longer, it would have gone up. And at like 0.3, you're in a blackout state. So this is a interesting case they're trying to make, that she was in pain. But unless you got your leg cut off in the morning, I don't think you're guzzling a whole bottle of vodka. And we don't even know how much she drank, because she threw up twice. She only had 10 shots in her system. She had another, you know, shot in her stomach that was undigested, and she probably puked up the rest. She finished the entire bottle. And that does not seem in line with somebody that's suffering from tooth pain to me at all.
Yeah, especially a woman that's been described as very responsible, a great mother. Why would she take down a whole bottle of vodka? And again, we could bring it up. I mean, possibly smoking marijuana as well. Why would she do that when she is responsible for these five little ones in her minivan?
Yeah. Her husband is defending her, and he's denying that there was alcohol in their system. This is a 100% saving face, defending your loved one situation, but he's got to at least accept that she had alcohol in her system. He initially comes out and says she doesn't drink, she doesn't smoke pot. But then it's like, well, she would drink on occasion, you know, but she would never get drunk. I never saw her drunk. And then he came back and said she smokes marijuana to relax. Well, that's a little bit of a diversion from she was the perfect mom and wife and there was no problem and she never did, you know, any drugs or alcohol. So statements are sort of changing a little bit. But again, it does not explain the amount of consumption that morning. And people say it's not possible to consume that amount of alcohol in that short amount of time. And apparently they lived a little bit of a more square lifestyle than I did, because I absolutely could drink that much alcohol in 15 minutes or less.
Daniel goes with Jay, who is his sister-in-law, and they visit Dr. Werner Spitz. He's a medical examiner. They talk to him about this. They make the case for Diane not being an alcoholic at all or being a drug abuser. Dr. Spitz is coming back with, well, this is what the autopsy says. This is what the toxicology report says. And they seem to have been done very well, that there's nothing wrong with those reports. And Daniel is saying, well, there must be something wrong because she wouldn't do that. And he starts talking about Diane's character and what he knows about her. And Dr. Spitz comes back with, alcohol results will always prevail, you know, in this situation. They're showing you what happened. This is why it went wrong. And if you can't accept that, I don't know what to say to you. Daniel is left with, we need to run more tests. And that was something that Tom Ruskin, his investigator, is supposed to do. He's supposed to have the lab tests run again to make sure that they were done properly.
I guess he paid Tom a lot of money. People think that the Ruskin and his firm were taking this family for a ride and re-victimizing them, which is possible. He might not have had the best customer service or level of attention to them. But it turns out, and if you saw the documentary, his results, the lab studies and stuff that he did, were in 100% compliance with the original tests that were run. So we have two tests that say the same exact thing, and Daniel still does not believe them. There is a little bit of conflict there because Ruskin will say that he sent the results to the lawyer. He says, I sent them all of this, and they claim that they never received it. I'm sure that a law office could have lost it in the fray, but Ruskin's saying he did his side of the bargain. He was paid to do these things, and he did them.
And he even went beyond what he was paid because he said toward the end there, he was just basically working for free at that point.
Now, I think that they say it's $30,000. I think that sounds steep, but I don't know. Maybe we should get into the private security, private detective business if we're getting $30,000 for a couple lab tests.
Well, and they didn't just run the tests again. They did DNA testing to make sure that these samples that they were testing were Diane's, and they were.
So there's no doubt that this was Diane, and the tests were exactly the same as what the state found. Diane was 5'3", correct? 204 pounds. So alcohol levels will change depending on male, female, weight, size. I just did an episode about binge eating and bulimia, and binge eating and binge drinking can go hand in hand. Diane obviously was binge drinking that morning. They say they never saw her drinking, but the investigation proves that some of her friends and coworkers had actually seen her drinking more recently. And one of them said something to the effect of she would complain about her marriage. She would complain about her job stress while she drank. So her husband might not have seen her drunk, as he says, might be more saving face. But others had definitely reported that, yeah, she would drink and she would get drunk just like anyone else.
Yeah, a friend of Diane's named Sheila came forward and said that Diane was visiting regularly at a bar on Long Island, and she would drink screwdrivers and gripe about her failing marriage and stressful job. I know this kind of flies in the face of what we've heard from her family, but just like we talked about with the closet alcoholics, it's a problem. If you're depressed or if you are having relationship issues, those aren't necessarily things that people go to the people they're having an issue with and start talking about. Sometimes you find someone outside of your circles to talk about these things with because you don't want to share it with everyone.
It's way easier to tell a stranger your deepest, darkest secrets than somebody that loves and respects you.
Now, Sheila said she would not describe Diane as an alcoholic. She would just say she liked her drinks. And again, she's confronted with this term, alcoholic. And Sheila does not say, yeah, she's an alcoholic. No, Diane just, maybe it's a stress reliever for her. She's having some drinks and she's talking about her issues. So in that regard, it doesn't seem that strange at all. It just seems strange because the people closest to her, her husband and sister-in-law and people like that are coming out and saying, no, she rarely drank.
Something that Daniel harps upon is her liver didn't show signs of an alcoholic's liver, which would be scarring or any kind of stress like that, which is possible, especially if she's building up on her drinks, not been an alcoholic all her life. Maybe she isn't even an alcoholic, but the definition of an alcoholic and the term is very vague. It actually doesn't really mean that you are addicted to alcohol and you have the shakes if you're not drinking it. It means that this drug has a detrimental effect on your life. Even an alcoholic who is able to hold their own while drinking and hide it cannot deal with an entire bottle of vodka. This is outside the norm. This is way more than the human body is supposed to handle. Again, I don't think that she was even hiding it from them that morning. I think this was, she began drinking in the car, possibly smoking a joint in the car. And her husband does not want anyone to think that he would knowingly put kids in the car with a drunk person behind the wheel. He doesn't want to believe that. So I get his denial here. We don't know what kind of pain people are going through either, but apparently Diane had something going on that day or that weekend.
Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Quince. Do you need to upgrade your wardrobe or home essentials at an unbeatable price? Well, Quince has you covered with timeless pieces that never go out of style, and you'll have them in your closet forever. And the best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% off less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to you. And Quince only works with factories that are safe, ethical, with responsible manufacturing practices, along with premium fabrics and finishes. How can you not love that? I recently got a duvet cover and a pair of awesome relaxed jeans. They're stretchy too. You can find all kinds of stuff at Quince. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/GenY for free shipping on your first order and 365-day returns. That's Quince, Quince.com/GenY to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/GenY. Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Some of us spend our lives wishing we had more time, but time for what? If time was unlimited, what would you use it for? If you need to squeeze a special thing into your schedule, do you even know what's important to you and how to make that a priority? Well, with therapy, you can find out what matters to you so you can do more of it. We all need to vent sometimes. We all need to talk about some of the things that have happened to us. And I'll tell you right now, your friends might be sick of hearing about it. So take the burden off them. Let a professional help you. Sometimes it's as simple as just getting something off your back and letting somebody else know so you can feel validated and move on with your life. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/GenY today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/GenY.
Right. And that's one thing I was thinking about. If you are chugging alcohol, perhaps what's bothering you is something emotional. People will say you'll drink your sorrows away. Again, I agree with you. I don't know that someone would drink like that to cover up tooth pain. But it's not necessarily the only reason that she would consume that much alcohol. Obviously, you could look at this situation, this tragedy, and you could come up with multiple reasons for why things happened the way they did. One scary thing that occurred to me while reading up on this was that she was consuming that much alcohol because she was intending to die. Working up the courage to do what she needed to do to stop the pain.
Whatever that may be.
Whatever that may be.
And because it took so long that morning between stops. I mean, she's meandering around. I don't think she had a plan. I think she was trying to figure out what she's going to do next.
Why didn't she just have a fender bender somewhere? Why didn't she just suddenly go off the road? The way things went down, she went southbound on a northbound lane and ran head on into another vehicle at 85 miles per hour. I mean, she could have driven home much earlier that day. She didn't have to be out there driving around like this.
She could have gone home, dropped the kids off, and then decided to leave. Something.
But she ends up driving around in that area the correct way, and then turning around, and then getting on the wrong road. The exit from Taconic State Parkway to Pleasantville Road. And for her to do that, I think she turned right to go up the wrong way. And she accelerated. If you look at what happened previous to this, she's drinking a whole bottle of vodka, essentially, possibly smoking marijuana. And when things are getting a little tense on the phone with her family, meaning the Hanses, she leaves her phone on that divider, that barrier. And it was left there. It wasn't tossed. It wasn't thrown. The phone was set down there. The man who found it described it as it looked like it was just set there.
So she had to pull over to the side of the road, get out, walk it over to the side, set it down, and then go back and get it back into her car. It's a very intentional act.
If you think about it, she was starting to get phone calls. And in fact, after she left the phone there, the phone was continuing to be called, although it may have been turned off because all of the calls were going to voicemail. But if she was intending to get into a horrible accident, which is a real possibility, she wouldn't want that phone ringing. There was probably enough stress in the vehicle as is. On one of the calls, they can hear kids crying. And I can only imagine that at that speed and cars honking and swerving, that it probably got very scary in that minivan.
A whole bottle of vodka is enough to wipe most people out. But when you combine alcohol and marijuana, that gives you a whole other level of nausea, dizziness, and disorientation. Yet, we see her driving aggressively on the road, and as other drivers report, deliberately. Maybe she's not full-blown drunk yet because it's taking a while for that alcohol to absorb into her system. But I know the one thing that keeps me sober is rage and anger. That's a buzzkill for the most part. So if she's angry about something, not really sure what, we can speculate, but she's had something happen that's broken her perfect world where everything's in order, where she has control of everything, and she's now drinking excessively. I think you can say that she might have been in a blacked out state doing all these things, but they seem rather deliberate to me.
Right. And people will say, but she had herself so well put together and she was able to take care of everything. She was planning everything. She was the boss. That's maybe why this happened the way it did. When you can't maintain what you have to be, when that gets broken, then maybe the alternative is scary and deadly.
Rock bottom's different for everybody. Most of us think of rock bottom as becoming homeless and drinking ourselves into oblivion in an alleyway. But there's executives that throw themselves out of high-rise windows when their stock goes down. Their rock bottom came up a lot quicker than most of ours, and we don't know where hers is. We don't know what caused her to snap, because I don't know if I believe that she wanted to die, but why would you drink that much and then start driving that way? Like, that, it makes a lot of sense what you're saying, and I had not considered that this was deliberate before we started doing this case. I just thought, she's drunk, she's blacked out, end of story. This is sort of textbook drunk driving incident. What more is there to think about? But she has some very deliberate actions leading up to this.
And I understand why there's this drive to try and protect Diane or her reputation, because she had essentially been Mother of the Year. I mean, if you look over what she was able to do in her life, holding down such a great job and doing so well for her family at home as well, it just does not make sense. So you can take that and apply it toward the actions of her husband, who completely denies and ignores these reports that come in that say that she was 2.5 times the legal limit drunk and had THC in her system. It doesn't matter what the truth is. You have all this time, years, where she has proven herself. And then there's this one day where, who is this person? You know, it says Diane Schuler, but the actions here, the amount of alcohol consumed and the THC in her system, it just doesn't make sense. If you aren't her husband, if you're an outsider and you start reading the reports and you start hearing from these other people, including Daniel's sister-in-law, who admits, she smoked marijuana all the time. When you start to factor that all together, and we don't have exactly what it is, but if something happened, if something was said to her that day, or she discovered something that greatly upset her, I mean, you've heard other cases where you know, someone will just break up with their girlfriend and she shows up at his house and puts some scissors in his neck. Everyone's reaction to news or to stressful situations is different. And I think there's a real possibility here that something happened that day that caused her to just, her bridge just collapsed.
Daniel's trying to save face. Questionable whether he's truly believes that all this information about his wife are lies or if he's the ultimate sociopath and trying to cover for her, but he's hired lawyers to be his PR reps. He starts filing lawsuits. One of them I can kind of see or get his point is the do not enter signage on the exit ramp. He says that the signage is not good enough and it's very confusing. One statement, he said there wasn't any signage, which is completely false. The signs are there. And if you're not suffering from dementia or have a bottle of vodka inside of you, you will see the signage. And nobody else had ever gone the wrong way on this highway before. So apparently the signage seems to be adequate, but he's suing the state saying it's not. He also is filing other lawsuits against his brother-in-law, which I know you took a lot of issue with, Aaron.
Yes, Daniel's wife, Diane, was beyond drunk, possibly high, and drove the wrong way on the highway. That resulted in the deaths of eight people, half of whom were young children. And I think if your wife was responsible for that, and then you sue the father or the parents of these little girls that died as a result of that crash, I think it's beyond disgusting. And I just don't accept that there were good reasons to do so.
Apparently his statement is because this was his brother-in-law's vehicle, he has to include him in the lawsuit, which I don't understand the legalities of that. He can say, no, I don't want to sue family. He chooses who he sues and who he doesn't. He sues an insurance company, fine. Sue the state, that's fine. But he chose to sue his brother-in-law, his family members, who have just lost all their children.
There are suits from different sides. And you had Longo family, you had the Bastardi families, you had the Hanses. And these lawsuits, these civil suits, are all settled in 2014. But we don't know the results or the terms of them because the judge sealed them. The lawyer for the Bastardi and the Longo families stated, she didn't just wake up one morning with a drug problem and capable of drinking that much alcohol. If the driver were alive today, the charges would be second-degree murder. I believe there is a strong fragrance of criminality. We need to find out what her husband, brother, and other family members know. Someone had to know, but that someone chose to say nothing, and now all these people are dead. That's their justification. Like, someone had to know something, and that's the feeling I got. Researching this case, I feel like someone knew that something was going on with Diane and hasn't said why. And it this is just a possibility, but I think it's because they may have upset her, either given her bad news or did something that upset her.
Yeah. And it's telling that her husband is suing in the opposite direction. The police report has determined that this was vehicular homicide. Now, this term gets thrown around, most times when there is a drunk driving accident, because you have consumed alcohol, you are intoxicated. If you kill somebody, they deem that a homicide. Doesn't really matter what your intention is. And the debate between Daniel, her husband, and what they show on the documentary is, was she intoxicated or not? That shouldn't be the debate. It's been proven beyond any doubt that she had alcohol in her system. She was three times the limit. I mean, this is just not normal. What we have to figure out is vehicular homicide, intent or not. That's the real question.
I wanted to briefly go over those who lost their lives that day. Obviously, Diane Schuler. We talked about her at the beginning. Emma Alexandra Hance, She was born on September 9th, 2000. And you can get a lot of information about these girls from the Hance Family Foundation website, which is a foundation that these young girls' parents started to encourage young girls to have self-confidence and self-esteem in the memory of their daughters. Emma Alexandra earned honors in reading and math and was in soccer, gymnastics, track, and softball. Allison Elizabeth Hance, born December 20th, 2001, excelled at school as well as soccer, gymnastics, and volleyball. Kate Marie Hance, also known as Katie, born on February 19th, 2004. She was known for making many friends, both boys and girls, and loved to dress up. And they say that Emma was very much the big sister and took care of her younger sisters. Brian Schuler survived the crash. He suffers from oculomotor nerve palsy, and it affects the movement in his right eye. He had surgery and did daily eye exercises for therapy. Jay, who's Daniel's sister-in-law, as well as a pediatrician, really encouraged and finally convinced Daniel to put Brian in therapy because he was having meltdowns. Erin Schuler, Brian's younger sister, was born June 8th, 2007. Michael Bastardi was 81. He was a Korean War veteran. He had retired from the auto parts business. His son, Guy Bastardi, was 49. He managed auto parts stores. And with them was their friend Daniel Longo, who was 74. They were actually on the way to a cookout. All lives that were interrupted due to this very tragic crash that happened on the Taconic State Parkway. Warren and Jackie Hance, there's a lot of information out there about what their marriage and what their lives went through after this horrible crash. They lost all of their children. They had a lot of friends and family who looked out for them. They would stay at their house so that they could just make sure that they were going to be okay and offered whatever assistance that they could. Some of their friends said, "You should have another child." And Jackie kind of pushed back against that, stating that she didn't feel like she deserved to be a mother again. But she would have a dream where she said the idea got in her head that, yes, she should be a mother again. She should give this another go because life should be about love. Luckily, there's a doctor, Dr. Zev Rosenwax, who offered to help the couple conceive without charge. He did in vitro fertilization. On the first go, Jackie became pregnant. And in October of 2011, she would give birth to Casey Rose Hance. And this is something that really touched me while reading about it, was Jackie said, even in the early days with Casey, that she just couldn't enjoy having this little one around because she still felt devastated by the loss of her children. But there's a moment where Casey looks up at her with her toothless smile, as she says it, and she said it started to melt her heart. And I think what it says is there's no way to prepare for something like this, for the loss of all of your children at once, let alone because of something that a relative did. This, to me, says this is not only survival, but it's they're able to somewhat recover. They have this new little daughter. They have their Hance Family Foundation. Jackie had written a book with Janice Kaplan titled I'll See You Again, which of course has much more information if you're looking for more information. But it's really just a very inspiring story that a couple could rebound from this, because I don't know what anyone would do in this situation. This is so devastating that I think all bets are off. I don't know if most marriages can survive this. This is something that most of us hopefully will never have to find out about or deal with. Jackie has spoken about how she deals with Diane. Early on, she had talked about how Diane had ruined their lives. But at some point, she forgives Diane and she visits her gravestone. And she says she forgives her because she needs to. She needs to be able to move on. And obviously holding all that hate or that judgment is not good for her. Her future needs to be about love, not about hate. And so she chooses to forgive. One other statement that Jackie makes that I think is worth noting is she says that Casey brought a heartbeat back to their house again. I do think there's a lesson. If you are experiencing depression, if you have anything emotionally devastating to you that's going on that you think you can handle, I think you need to think twice. Because the one thing I know about this case, if I was going to put anything down on it and say, this is what I really believe, I believe that Diane was self-medicating. I think she was lying to herself. She was saying, I can handle this, I can handle this. And then something happened that she just couldn't handle. She couldn't hide it and she couldn't deal with it. Anybody who's listening to this who might have something going on that is really difficult and that they're having trouble handling, but maybe they're saying, but I'll get through it, I'll be okay. Maybe it's time to talk to somebody, because I have a feeling that if Diane had opened up and had sought help for whatever was going on with her, then this wouldn't have happened.
There's no shame in getting help.
I think it's time that everybody just admit when they need help. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Welcome to the small town of Chinook, where faith runs deep and secrets run deeper. In this new thriller, available exclusively on Wondery Plus, religion and crime collide when a gruesome murder rocks the isolated Montana community. Everyone is quick to point their fingers at a drug-addicted teenager, but local deputy Ruth Vogel isn't convinced. She suspects connections to a powerful religious group. Enter federal agent V.B. Loro, who has been investigating a local church for possible criminal activity. The pair form an unlikely partnership to catch the killer, unearthing secrets that leave Ruth torn between her duty to the law, her religious convictions, and her very own family. But something more sinister than murder is afoot, and someone is watching Ruth. With an all-star cast led by Emmy nominee Sanaa Lathan and Star Wars Kelly Marie Tran, Chinook is available exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.